All right. This week, again, we are continuing to give shiurim based on, and we'll have this for another couple of weeks, the parshiot that we're reading in Israel. And this week we're reading Parshat Balak, which is really the story of Bilam. And the Gemara refers to it as Parshat Bilam. And I'd like to look at some global things about the whole story. Now, to quickly recap, this is a unique story. And as a matter of fact, there's a statement in Chazal that seems to point to it. In the famous sugya that we've seen a number of times in the end of the first parakub of Batra, that talks about the authors of the different books of the Bible, it makes the statement that Moshe katav sifro uparshat Bilam, the Sefer Iyov. That Moshe is the author of Iyov, Moshe is the author of his book, which we assume is the Torah, and Parshat Bilam. And of course, everybody raises their hands. What do you mean? Bilam's in the Torah. What do you mean he wrote his Sefer and Bilam? So there's a division among the Rishonim of how to understand it. Some of the Ritva makes the suggestion, says there was some other book called Parshat Bilam that Moshe authored, and we don't have it anymore. But other Rishonim take the approach of saying Bilam is the one story in which Bnei Yisrael aren't even in the background. They're not there. It's a story that takes place totally away from the stars of the show. And therefore, the idea is that Moshe not only wrote Sifro, he also wrote that story in the Torah of Parshat Bilam. And so Bilam itself is a fascinating story, and it's made up really of three parts. Besides the Koda, which has nothing to do with Bilam, really, perhaps later Midrashically we connect it. But within the story itself, there are three parts. The first part of the story is the entreaty, which is the request of basically the king of Moab, although the elders of Midian are involved at the very beginning, to try to get Bilam to come and curse Bnei Israel. And the second part, which follows directly from the first part, is the famous donkey scene, which we've dealt with several times, how to understand that. But the third part, of course, is the main kishkas of it, which is Bilam, Balak, a bunch of altars, a bunch of korbanot, a bunch of attempts to curse Bnei Israel, and a bunch of brachot. Now, I'm saying a bunch and being kind of flip about it, but if you take a look here, you could see what I've done is I've given you basically the whole story, skipping the whole donkey scene. And the first section, which is in the black highlighted font, meaning with the white font and the black background, is the introduction, which is the entreaty. And I just took you to the very beginning of the entreaty. Then I skip to the end of chapter 22 and go through all of chapter, the rest of 22, all of 23, and all of 24, which takes us through the scene of the blessing and the curse. Now, in that scene, you can see that I've highlighted the actual words of the blessings. And we see that there are four of them here. And we're going to take a look at the relationship between these blessings, but I want to start with a couple of assumptions that I think we all come to the table when studying the story of Bilam. We come with these assumptions, and I think that they are probably at least questionable, if not incorrect. Assumption number one, and this is an audience participation one. Assumption number one, what was Balak's goal? What did Balak want to accomplish? I know he wanted Bilam to curse Bnei Israel. To what end? What do you think?
He wanted the Jews destroyed.
He wanted the Jews destroyed, exactly. That's the common conception, and I think we're going to demonstrate successfully that that's not the case. I'm not saying he would have shed tears if that had happened, but I don't think that was his goal. The second thing, which I think is also just a subtle kind of conception that we come to the text with, is that Bilam had no idea what was going to happen next, meaning Balak takes him to a place and says, take a look at them and curse them. Okay, Bilam says to Balak, here's altars, bring up an ox and a ram at each altar. And then let me see what happens. And he comes back and God puts the words in his mouth and he says, beautiful bracha. And as far as Bilam is concerned, that's it. And then when Balak says, let's try somewhere else, Bilam says, all right, I'm here. You paid me. I'm here for the ride. But that this isn't part of Bilam's plan. I don't think that's the case. I think that Bilam, from the beginning, intends all four of these brachot. Or conversely, or should we say alternatively, because God is prophesying through Bilam and feeding Bilam these words, God has intent that this is going to happen over the course of these four blessings. In other words, we can't look at the blessings independently. But we have to look at them as a unit. So let me demonstrate both of those misconceptions, or should we say what I think is the more accurate read. Let's start with the first one. The first one is, what was Balak's interest? And I think Nigel's right that that's the way most people read it, is that Balak's interest was in seeing Bnei Yisrael be destroyed. However, let's take a look at the story itself. What happens? The very beginning. Vayar Balak ben Sipori, kol asher asa Yisrael la'emori. So the first thing is Balak sees what we just read about, and here in Chutz La'aretz we're going to read about this week, which is Am Yisrael's victory over Sichon and Og, who were the Amorite king. Well, Sichon was an Amorite king who migrated from the West Bank to the East Bank and conquered it, and then we beat the pants off him, and we took that part of the East Bank. Balak saw that. Vayagor Moab ibnei ha'am me'od kiravhu. Moab was very afraid of our army. That's of course, in early parts of Tanakh, usually means army, because we were huge. Vayakots Moab ibnei Israel, they were sick of us and frightened of us. And by the way, that's a term that we last heard, if you remember, in the very beginning of the Mitzrayim narrative, Vayakots ibnei Israel. All right, they just were fed up. Vayom Moab el zikne Midyan. So Moab turns to the elders of some of the Bedouins who live nearby, who are Midyan, and they say the following. Sorry, it's hard to read, but this congregation is going to eat up, and notice he doesn't say am, and I'll explain why. He's going to eat up everything around, just like an ox eats up the vegetables. Now, let's clarify what's happening. The word am, again, in early parts of Tanakh, usually means army. Kahal, on the other hand, means congregation. What is it that Balak is really afraid of? He's not afraid of a military incursion. He's afraid that this group that has just marched through, and they're basically the 500-pound bear. Where does a 500-pound bear sleep? Wherever he wants. They've camped out at my doorstep, and they're not moving. And I'm afraid that they're going to use up all of my resources. They're going to eat everything up. And you'll take a look. You'll see it a little bit later in his words. He sends messengers all the way up to Mesopotamia. By the way, this has got to take a few weeks in each direction. And what's his statement? This army has left Egypt. They have covered the entire land. I can't see the land anymore. There's so many people. And he's sitting at my doorstep, essentially. I want you to come and curse these people because they are more powerful, meaning this army is more powerful than I am, meaning I can't use military action to dislodge them, because what would I like to do? Maybe I can smite him. Now, smite him doesn't mean destroy him, as you will see. I'll drive him out. In other words, Balak's concern is resources. And if you know anything about the Middle East, you know resources are spare. The most important resource, of course, we're talking about is water, which was in the background of the 67 wars, you know. One second. And Balak is concerned that his resources are going to be depleted because of this huge nation that's camped there and isn't moving so quickly. And he doesn't know that they're waiting for Moshe Rabbeinu to give his last testament and to move on, because the decree has already happened and he's not going to. They don't know that. All they know is this people have camped there and they're going to eat everything up. Now, let's keep in mind that in Parshat Chukat, which again, Dovi, you've already read, we're going to read this week. In Parshat Chukat, when Am Yisrael is marching through Jordan, the message that they send out to Edom and to Moab, to Ammon, is, let me please go through your land, and if we drink any of your water, we'll buy it. The issue is water. So if we come through, we'll pay for any resources that we use. Now, one of them allowed them. Sihon, who was an interloper, also didn't allow them, but Sihon, we were allowed to go to battle against. We fought them, we beat them, and now we're camped at Balak's front doorstep. And he's concerned that we're going to eat up the resources. That's the concern, which means what is it he wants Bilam to do? He wants Bilam to curse them, either so they should just get up and leave, because this is a cursed place, or else that they'd be weakened enough that he, with his smaller army, can threaten them and get them to move. That's what his concern is. Okay, Jason, you had a question.
Yeah, what I was going to say is, so clearly the Havanei Chachmalo from Paro does not get transmitted to him, because it has that similar sound, meaning that you gave Shir years ago where Paro thought this nation was building up and it's going to go to war against him. Here, it's not a war.
That's why Paro calls us an Am. There you got a bigger army than we do. Right. Correct.
But it's not war, but it's a different type of war. It's an economic war because
here it's not a war. It's not talking about a war.
I'm saying it's an economic resource issue.
Right. Now, he's not talking about the concern that Am Yisrael is going to go to war against us and beat us.
No, they're just going to eat up the food.
Exactly. And therefore, and we can't dislodge them because they got a mighty army. They got two things going for them. One is they are so populous that we can't dislodge them and they're a threat. And second of all, they got a mighty army because we saw what they just did to Sihon. So we can't force them out militarily. We need someone to curse them for that purpose. Okay, I want to put that in because we have to remember, if that's what Bilam's job is, then we have to look at Bilam's words in that light. Okay. The second thing is, I'm claiming that the brachot are all intended, meaning that it's not as if Bilam gets up there and says the first very short bracha. We're going to look at all of them. And then, surprise, surprise, Balak wants him to do another one. It's all planned. Now, again, it could be that Bilam has no clue and God's running the store and God knows that Balak's going to try two more times and therefore that's how it does. I'm not concerned with that. But let me demonstrate it to you. If we take a look here at the brachot and look at the structure of the brachot themselves, you could see, first of all, that each one of the brachot, I'm talking about three brachot and a fourth. And this follows the pattern that we've seen so many times in Tanakh of 3 + 1. There are three brachot that are given to Am Yisrael per the current situation. And then there's a fourth, which is eschatological. It's about the future. Now, each one of these brachot starts, and I color-coded it, with an introduction to the bracha. And the introduction is always about Bilam's role and maybe Balak's role in this. Then, in the first two brachot, there is an apologia, which says, I can't curse. You want me to curse? I can't curse. I can only bless. Notice, though, that in the first one, he says, how can I curse if God hasn't cursed? And in the second one, he says, God is blessed and he won't take it back. So we move from curse, negating the curse, to affirming the blessing. Notice that section is already missing in the third one. There's no red. And then the main content is in purple, royal purple, and that is the actual blessing. Now you notice something interesting happening in the blessing. And again, I'd like to demonstrate that this is a planned and elegant structure. The couplet, Yaakov and Yisrael, as a team, show up 7 times in this section. 1 time in the first bracha, 3 times in the second bracha, once more in the final bracha, the third, which gives us 5. And then if you take a look here, you will see it shows up again twice more in the final bracha, meaning number 4, together creating what we call a heptad, which is 7 times that it shows up. In other words, that there's a deliberate structure that's happening. Not only that, but if you look at bracha number 2, I'm just doing this to demonstrate that the brachot are connected and are planned. The second bracha has a line, El Motziam Mitzrayim Ketoafot Re'im Lo, God took them out of Mitzrayim like a wild beast right? And the exact phrase shows up in the third bracha, except instead of motziam, it's motzio. Not only that, but in the second bracha, the nation is compared to a lioness and a lion, and in the third bracha, like to a lion and to a lioness, right? So there's clearly this dialogue going on between these brachot. More than that, you can see that in the first bracha, and again, we're going to look at all of them in detail. In the first bracha, you see the couplet, Erenu and Ashurenu. I will see him and I will look down on him. And that same phrase shows up in the fourth bracha, the final bracha, which is at the beginning, Erenu velo ata, Ashurenu velo karo. The second bracha has the use of the word El, actually shows up several times. El is a name for God, and that is used here powerfully in the final bracha, Mi Yichyeh Misumo El. The third bracha uses a relatively uncommon word, which is machatz, to smash, v'chitzav imchatz, and that's another word that shows up, umachatz patei Moab. In other words, each one of these three brachot provides a source for the final bracha, the final bracha bringing a sum to them together. So the reason I'm pointing this out is that we have to look at these three plus one brachot as a unit and not as independent pieces. They are planned and they grow in intensity. But in order to understand them, we have to remember the background. Balak has hired Bilam to curse the people to get them to leave, or shall we say, to weaken them enough that we can drive them out with a military threat, not to destroy them. Let's now see what it is that Bilam's brachot say, because the bracha is the opposite of the kola. As a matter of fact, in Sefer Dvarim, what do we read? Vayahafoch Adonai et hakola libracha. God overturned the kola into a bracha. Okay, so now we're only going to look at the purple, the brachot. It starts with Kimirosh Tsurim Erenu Migvaot Ashurenu. I see him, this nation, from the top of mountains, which sounds like Bilam describing his own circumstance, and says, Hein am levadad yishkon uvagoyim lo yitchashav. Now let's think about how that impacts on the statement, on the goal, on the purpose here. This nation dwells by itself and is not considered among the nations. Now, what does that mean? It could mean saying that Am Yisrael is going to do whatever they want to do. They don't care about anybody else. And you can't convince them differently and you can't budge them. It can also be that they just aren't considered like a regular nation, meaning the way that God, the way that their destiny, however it is, plays out is something you can't map out with other histories, which, by the way, we know is historically true about Am Yisrael. We don't fit any schematic of history. And then he says the following. Mimana Afar Yaakov Mispart Rova Yisrael, essentially saying Am Yisrael is innumerable. It's a way of rephrasing the bracha to Avraham. And of course, that directly speaks to Balak's concern, but it's basically saying, tough, too bad. They are huge, and guess what? You're not going to be able to move them. Tamod Nafshi Mot Yisharim Uti Achri Kamohu. And now Bilam essentially says, I wish I could be part of them. Which, by the way, is not a very comforting thing for Balak. I don't care about that. All right, second bracha. Bilam moves the bar up. Lo hibit aven b'Yaakov lo ra'amal b'Yisrael, which may mean that Am Yisrael is pure and blameless, or it may mean God will not see anything sinful about them, which changes the tone of the entire scene. And that is, in order for me to be able to get God to agree to curse them, we've got to find some fault in them, and there's no fault. And take a look. Adonai Elohav Imo Utrat Melech Bo. God is with them as their king. El Motziam Mitzrayim Ketofot Reimo. He took them out of Mitzrayim. And now we get to what's the real crux of this whole thing. Ki lo nachash b'Yaakov lo kesem b'Yisrael. Am Yisrael does not participate in and is not affected by the world of magic. Which means me trying to curse them will not work unless God agrees. I can't pull shtick to try to get the curse to happen. And since we already know that God loves them and God will not see or identify any sinful behavior, it's a lost cause. Not only does God have that tremendous favor for them, but God even informs them of his own doings. God gives us information. That's what the beginning of Bereishit, about God's own plans, right? Give me the opposite of what you're looking for. You're looking for a distance from God. This is, by the way, expressed in Tehillim Kuf Mem Zayin, Magid Dvarav LeYaakov Mishpatav LeYisrael Lo Asachem L'Chol Goy. God shares secrets with us, intimate secrets with us. He doesn't share with anybody else. And as a result of that, Hein Am K'Lavi Yakum, Am again the army. This army gets up like a lioness, the Chari Nasa, and grows powerful like a lion. Lo Yoshkav Ad Yochal Teref Dam Chalim Yishteh. He won't go to sleep until he has his prey. Now, important to note, Am Yisrael has not threatened Moav at all. As a matter of fact, the opposite. In Parshat Chukat, Am Yisrael comes to Moav and says, let me pass through. And Moav says, no. And we move around. And in Sefer Dvarim, we hear about it. In Parshat Dvarim, that we were not allowed to attack Moav. And if Moav didn't allow us through, we had to go around. Which means we're not directly threatening their land. Which means Bilam, subtly or not so subtly, is telling Balak, listen, you can get out of this, not nearly as whole as you wanted to, but you can survive this encounter. You know how you survive this encounter? Don't do anything. You wanted me to weaken them to the point where you could drive them out. Ain't happening. However, if you don't provoke them, they won't be your enemy. And then you have a chance, because guess what? If you provoke them, they are like a lioness. Like a lion, they will not finish until they've finished you off. Okay, and that's the second bracha. Balak tries it again, and we move to the third bracha, and now we get into a whole different territory. I want you to see how these things have grown. Bilam takes a look at Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael, which is an army set up as an army camp, but it's a unique army because it's an army of families. Remember, we travel as an army. We have Machane Yehuda and Machane Ephraim on the other side, and on one side Machane Reuven, the other side Machane Dan, the Mishkan in the middle. We're all camped like that because we're an army. As a matter of fact, how do we reckon the camps? We count the soldiers. And yet, it's an army with the families along. Somewhat strange. And so watch what Bilam says when he looks at the camp. Ma tovu ohalacha Yaakov. Your tents are so good. Mishkinotecha Yisrael. And maybe he's even alluding to the fact that this is a family army. Kinechalim nitayu kiganot alei nahar. They are like rivers. Now, by the way, we're in the desert. Like rivers and like gardens next to water. Ki ahalim natadunai. Ahalim here is aloe. Ka'arazim alei mayim. This is like cedars next to the water. And that, of course, evokes the picture in Yirmiyahu, Yud Zayin, right? And Tilim Aleph, Karar, like a tree next to the water. Again, this image of lots and lots of water. And what's that coming from? I believe that what Bilam is pointing to is the fact that the tents are tents where husbands and wives live together. And there's fruitfulness and there's children being born in the midst of this army. And now he moves it up, and that's why I put a space in. The Arom Me'agag Malko, the Tinasei Malchuto. And again, the notion of Malchut is intensified. In the first bracha, Jewish monarchy doesn't exist. In the second one, it shows up once, and it's God as king. And now, in the third, it shows up twice, and it's Am Yisrael's king. And Am Yisrael's king will become greater than Agag. And Agag seems to be a royal name among the Amaleki families, because Amalek's going to show up. This is not the Agag of Shaul, but Agag seems to be a royal name in that family, because you'll see Amalek plays a critical role here. And again, El Motzio Mitzrayim Ketofot Reim Lo. Yochal Goyim Sarav Asmoteim Yigarei Mechitzav Imchatz. Again, they're going to smash their enemies. Karash Achav Karich Lavim Yikemenu. Again, they lie down like lion. They don't go to sleep until they've had their prey, and then they go to sleep, and nobody's going to wake them up. And how does he end the brachot? beautifully. Mevarchecha baruch varecha arur. Anybody who blesses you, Am Yisrael, is blessed, which means, by the way, Bilam's patting himself on the shoulder. I just got a bracha. And arecha arur, anybody who curses you is cursed, which, of course, is evoking Abraham. Now, if you notice, in the first bracha, he prefaced it by saying, I can't curse. The second one, he said, I have to bless. He gave no such introduction to the third, but at the end of the third, he brought them together and said, anybody who blesses you is blessed, anybody who curses you is cursed. It's a beautiful, this whole thing is a beautifully well-organized, well-structured series of brachot that takes us from, look, they're mighty, don't mess with them and don't provoke them, and ultimately they are going to be ruling, but they're not going to be ruling here, they're going to be ruling in their own land. So you don't have to be afraid of that yet. Balak at that point gives up. And Bilam turns around and said, I'm not done. This is when things get interesting. He says, I'm not done. And Bilam turns around, and this is the end of what he says. And he gives his own speech. And again, in the green is his introduction. Erenu velo ata, ashurenu velo karov. If you remember, in the opening line, I see him from the top of the mountains. And now what does he say? I'm seeing him, but not now. I'm looking down on him, but not something nearby. Meaning, what I'm telling you now is not about right now. Everything I told you about is right now. Who Am Yisrael is. Now let me tell you who Am Yisrael is going to be. Am Yisrael is going to go into their land. They're going to leave you alone. And you'll have a respite for a while. And then, Darach Kochav Miyakov becomes Shem Yisrael. There's something very powerful about Darach Kochav Miyakov, which of course, Rabbi Akiva darshaned as being about Bar Kochba, and that's why he named Bar Kochba, is Kochav was also a source of Avodah Zarah. Remember, this entire thing is rejection of pagan thinking. So Darach Kochav miYaakov, Darach is something that you, when you pull the bow back, Yaakov shoots the stars. And a ruler comes from Israel, and what's that ruler going to do? Umachatz pate Moab. They're going to smash the corners of Moab, the edges of Moab territory. Vekarkar kol b'nei Sheit. B'nei Sheit is emanated somewhere in eastern Jordan, and they're going to destroy them too. Vahaya Edom Yeresha. They're going to then inherit Edom. These are all the nations, by the way, that we circled and didn't go through. We circumnavigated and didn't go through in Parshat Chukat. Vahaya Edom Yeresha. Vahaya Yeresha Seir Evav. Seir part of Edom. Yisrael osechayil, and Yisrael is going to just continue to be successful and get wealthy. V'yerd mi Yaakov, a ruler will come out from Yaakov, avid sarid meyer, and they'll get rid of all of the remnants from the city. In other words, this is down the pike. V'yaret Amalek, now he looks and he sees Amalek. Now, what does he see Amalek? Prophetically. Amalek's not physically there. Now, Bilam has moved up a notch. He's not only looking at the future of the nation that's in front of him, he's looking at nations that aren't even there, but are in the orbit of Am Yisrael. So far, he's mentioned Moab, B'nai Sheit, and Edom. Number four in the middle is, because the middle of seven is four, Vayaret Amalek, Vayisam Shalom V'yamar. What does he say about Amalek? Reshit Goyim Amalek. Now, that's a weird thing. Amalek is some relatively small group of Bedouin tribes. They are the first of the nations. What does that mean? Maybe because they're the first nation to attack Am Yisrael. Va'achrito adei oved, and their end is destruction. Amalek will be destroyed. And now vayarta keni, he sees the keni. The keni is the midanim. I saw Shalom Yomar. Etan moshavecha v'sim masala kinecha. You have a strong place you're going to live. The keni, by the way, were friendly with us. But ultimately, Assyria may take you captive, if that's how we read the pasuk. And then he looks and says, who can ever live if God is angry at them? And there will be ships that come from Kitim, which is very likely Cyprus. And they'll all be destroyed. Essentially, the scene that Bilam describes here is one where Am Yisrael is mighty throughout the Middle East and destroys all its enemies. And it comes close to the picture that we see of David in Shmuel Bet Perichet, where he takes all the way to the Euphrates and everybody there is giving tribute. What do we see in this whole piece? We have to remember that Bilam was first summoned by Balak in order to curse the army so that they would be weak enough that Balak could use military action to move them out of the way. Bilam's first bracha, Bilam continues says throughout, which is, I can't do anything unless God says so. Whatever God puts in my mouth, I'm going to say. Why Bilam is treated the way that he is later on in Tanakh and in Chazal is something we've talked about in other times. But Bilam says, I'm loyal to God. Whatever God says, I'm loyal to Hashem. Whatever Hashem says, that's what I'm going to say. The first bracha, and again, it's a series that's planned. The first bracha is, they are just way numerous. Nothing you can do about it. The second one is, if you provoke them, they'll kill you. So your best bet is just to sit and wait. And they're actually not going to do anything right now. And they don't. And the third one is, but ultimately they're going to move into the land and they're going to establish a kingdom, which will be the powerful kingdom. But that still is not really a threat to Balak. In a sense, Bilam's brachot are also advice to Balak. Just stay where you are. Let them be here. Resources are gone. Okay, you'll be able to survive and move on from it. And then, because remember, 3 + 1 is a common biblical motif in bracha number 4, which is not about Am Yisrael that we're looking at, but Am Yisrael the future, and includes nations that are not present, but nations that are all over the Middle East. Bilam then gives nevuah about Am Yisrael's ultimate power throughout the Middle East and overpowering these nations. What we've seen here over the course of the past 30 minutes or so is that, unlike our starting conception that Balak wanted to destroy Am Yisrael, we saw that Balak's interested in getting them to move. And unlike the common perception that each of these brachot stands on its own, because Bilam had no reason to think that there was going to be a second attempt or a third attempt, and the only one that he initiates is the fourth, is that it seems, at least in retrospect, that all four of them are a planned unit of 3 + 1. They interact with each other. They also, all three of them interact with number 4. We saw that. What is it that Bilam is expressing in these brachot? Because again, what is it that Hashem is putting in Bilam's mouth that Balak needs to hear? Essentially, these people are like no other people. You can't think to strategize against them the way that you strategize against anybody else. They are God's people. God has a unique and intimate relationship with them. And when God chooses to, he will see nothing wrong with them. They'll be absolutely blameless. And there's no way that you can get God angry at these people. Your best bet is to let sleeping lions lie. And just let them be. And then, because they're not establishing their kingdom here, let them move into their land. You have something to worry about maybe a few hundred years from now. In the meantime, stay in Moab and enjoy the resources that you have.